Supervisor.
This is the Music Supercast.
It's in my interest, in ours perhaps, for me to smoke a joint and calm down.
Hosted by Supergroup's Mary Prankster and lead music supervisor David Heyman. Recorded out of their Toronto and LA headquarters. Produced by Sorrel Sound and all vetted by me, Amani Sabri. Check out the Supercast blog at wearethesupergroup.com/MSC and don't forget to share.
I think I got my swagger back.
Maybe it's just from coming from a punk background that, like, I think it might always be unorthodox with me just because that's where I started, you know?
Welcome back to the Music Supercast. On the line today from Brooklyn, we have James Matthew VII. Blind Matty, as you may know him, he's on the heels of a double placement of Burden of Truth, which we did, which is on Netflix right now. Check it out, season 3, we put him in a car, we put him in a bar, and yes, he likes green eggs and ham. Matty's the man. We had a great conversation and shot the shit about what he does, how he manages to do it for so long, and what it's like being the ultimate insider outsider around. Matty has played in countless sessions with big names like Bone Thugs and Harmony, Tina Turner, and countless others, was part of No Warning, Yacht Club, Marvelous Darlings, and other insane projects with his buddies, including the Music Supercast alumni, Young Gov, Mr. Ben Cook. Go to read from his bio because it's one of my favorites around. His pitch package, as they say, for the music supervisors in town. We get these a ton. We get them at all hours of the day. Stop sending them to me on Friday. That's ridiculous. Anyhow, this was perfect. So shouts to Alex at IdeaFX Records. And this was perfect because it was cohesive. All the download links were there. MP3s, waves, you know I like MP3s, instrumentals and mains. There was a bio. The whole thing was cohesive within the psychedelic cosmic country format of Matty's brand. It was perfect, clean, and this bio is fantastic. So I'm going to read from it. James Matthew VII, the seventh man to share the name down a long line of artists, soldiers, and sages going back to the days of the American Revolution. His debut LP, Cosmic Folk Ballads, is due out in the winter of 2019. It follows his debut EP, Gringo, on Burger Records, which was released under the Blind Matty moniker. Cosmic Folk Ballads is pure, potent, cosmic American music, a contemporary convergence of sounds, themes, and feelings that simultaneously evoke the past and represent a way forward. The record was designed and assembled in and between San Antonio, Bushwick, and Toronto, and features performances from some of the finest musicians that these regions have to offer. An ensemble cast featuring Augie Myers, Daddy Longlegs, John Catfish, Doc Dunn, Young Gov, and members of the Sadies, amongst others. They all ride along JMV7 as he steers listeners through space and time across the vast North American mainlands and cosmic nether regions. Mixed and finished in an all-analog studio and mastered directly to tape, the record covers a large amount of sonic territory. It catapults the AM gold standard sounds of the American rock and roll and the heady, hermetic haze of the long-forgotten private press country, folk, and psychedelia records into the modern times. A notorious bird brother for the Big Data era, the sedated folk rock evokes memories of pre-Crazy Horse Neil Young on Stone When I Pray, while Gypsy Mare takes us on a dragon-gilded tour of Canyon Country saloons. Mess Me Up is pure John Lee Hooker for dusty desert freaks. Glenn Diamond is a greasy slab of psyched-out country funk that smacks you firmly in the gut with J.J. Cale's leather boot. Cosmic Folk Ballad also features some choice-cut covers. Flowers, a melancholy, acid archive-approved dose of Canadiana that was originally released on a privately pressed record by Huckle in 1973. And Riding High was initially recorded in 1973 by James' mentor and legendary Bay Area record producer Bill Cutler, and then featured Jerry Garcia and members of the New Riders of the Purple Sage. James Matthew VII is a singer-songwriter for uncertain times. When he's not in San Antonio studying conjunto music, he'll either be studying bluegrass harmony or spending his time in Joshua Tree staring directly into the sun. If you're lucky, you'll be able to catch him live, whether he's backed by a 13-piece caravan of freaks or telling it like it is alone with an acoustic guitar and harmonica. It's a trip. What a great bio. Just love it. Loved having him on the show. Again, trying to keep it short, so watch Utopia Falls on Hulu. We're into the final season of Schitt's Creek. I hope you're watching. I hope you're keeping up with Letterkenny and gearing up for some incredible feature films coming out of this office. So follow us at wearethesupergroup.com and find every single podcast at every single outlet that you can find podcasts at. But go to Apple, leave a comment, leave a review. Even if you're harassing me or borderline offensive, I don't care. I'm okay with it as long as you just get something down there. We need to get our numbers up. We need to get more ears on musicians like Blind Maddie, like James Matthew VII. And remember, as Frank Zappa said in this snowy season, don't you eat that yellow snow. All right, here's Maddie.
I kind of just released the Blind Maddie thing as a tape with Burger Records. Like, you know, it almost felt like an experiment. It was kind of me just trying something new musically a bit, you know. And as it like kind of progressed and I decided that I actually wanted to pursue it more, I just decided to go by my actual name, which is James Matthew. And I happen to be a seventh, so I stuck the seven behind it, you know. You know, my name's actually is James. My family calls me Matthew. No one calls me. My friends call me Maddie. So, and I go by James in the when I talk to the bank or something, you know.
Oh, right on. Well, I'm the bank man. I'm gonna get you fucking paid this year. That's what Sync's all about, brother. Well, Maddie, I appreciate not correcting me. Last time we had a podcast, I called the guy Dimitri for the whole entire podcast, and his name is Kevin.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, to be honest, I go by I go by so many different names. It's ridiculous. You know, my family, other people call me Matt as well. So I got like four aliases I'm going by.
But you really compartmentalize your work. So the first time you were Blind Maddie, you kind of put on a bit of a costume and hid yourself a little bit to try the lap steel vibes, like the sort of Mexican vibes.
Yeah, it was
vibes.
Just fun. Like I thought, I liked like the pirate look. I thought it was cool, you know.
And it
I
is just cool.
Fun it's with great. It. Like I never actually performed with it, and the name itself was just an ode to like old blues, you know, because I was really loving that music at that time and still do. And
Blind Willie McGee.
Just, my friends just named me it one night. We were because I was listening to a lot of blues and I was playing dobro guitar at that time, and they were like Blind Maddie, and I just went with it, you know.
Right on. So Burger Records is kind of like an experiment with artists. They kind of take in anybody who's willing to party with them and fits their vibe.
Yeah, I think I released some records with them previous with this band I had called the Marvelous Darlings, which is kind of power pop band or whatever, you know, that kind of punk thing or whatever. And then I released another record with them as well that was more on the yacht rock tip. It was called like Yacht Club, and it was we released like, you know, six singles, just 45s with different labels. And I think Burger actually released a six song EP with that thing. It was mainly a songwriting thing me and Ben were doing and kind of drifting in more of a pop direction, but also yacht rocky, because you know we both like that, and we were just experimenting writing some of that kind of stuff, and you know it was fun, just an experiment really. We were just like influenced by like 70s yacht rock records and kind of recreating it with like some of the recording and songwriting, you know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean, but you could take a song like Golden Dawn, which to me the video, I love the video, I checked it out, and it's kind of Birds-esque, you know, George Harrison-y, nothing really happens beautifully, it's all analog, it's dirty, but it could easily go the other way on that song, it could be yacht rock.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you can go any direction with a song and stylistically, you know, after you establish the chords or the melody or whatever. And yeah, you know, I could definitely hear that one. That's a little turned up on the yacht rock for sure.
That project is you and Ben, like co-written all, what is it, five songs?
on that album?
Well, that record basically
That's the Bloom album?
Yeah, I recorded that all myself in Toronto, all the music for it. I recorded this past, I guess it was in February. I broke up with my long-term partner and moved to Hamilton in my friend's house. He had an empty house, and we set up a studio there and basically wrote all those songs in that time period. And me and my friend just had nothing to do but stay home and record. So we just stayed home, and we made that record. And then I had all of the instrumentals and pretty much all the melody ideas themselves before I came down to meet Ben in New York, because Ben was living in New York. And I came with that finished, the instrumentals to that record basically completely finished, and played it for Ben and my friend Anthony, and then who does the Maximum Exposure label. And then we collaborated on the lyrics for the record together, and then we decided to put it out together because we both had records coming out, and we thought it would be a cool thing to do, you know, just for our records coming out in the summer or whatever, just to put out a collaboration record together or whatever. But
no, it's a perfect little compliment, and it's a nice little bridge between both projects, because it does kind of live on that yacht between them both.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like that record, even though his name isn't on it, but Ryan Gavel was a big person for that Bloom EP, because we recorded at his house. He played a ton of percussion on it. I mean, it's a big collaboration between lots of people. I just put Ben's name on it because he sang on it or whatever. But there's actually a lot of people on that record. Doc Dunn is on it, and he plays a ton of instruments on it. He plays, if you look at his, he plays tambora, banjo, fuzz guitar, he plays vibraphone, he plays a lot of stuff. So that record really was a big collaboration.
Beautiful. There's also a track with Augie Myers. How did that happen? And tell our audience who that is, first of all.
Augie Myers is a very famous organ player and also songwriter from San Antonio, who played with a band called the Sir Douglas Quintet in the 60s, who had kind of hits in the kind of British invasion scene, but they were a Texas band and they had a few different hits. And they're actually one of the first Spanish and white people in a band together, because back then, you know, it's kind of unheard of in certain parts to do something like that. But Augie went on as well to play with this guy who sang for that band, Doug Somm, and they made a lot of records together. Doug Somm's a very important guy in the Texas music history. You know, he's like influenced a lot of people and made incredible records himself. So anyways, and then from then on, Augie Myers went on to play with Bob Dylan in the 90s. He did a couple records with Bob and Tom Waits as well.
So Augie, you met him how? How did you meet this guy?
So basically, I went down to Texas. I was playing down there, and I made friends with this guy named Daniel, who I know kind of more from like punk rock, I guess, because we both played in punk bands when we were younger, and our bands kind of had a bit of a crossover. So we connected because he liked the Blind Maddie tape, and then we just so happened to have this funny history as well together. And I met him down there in Texas, and the first thing he's a big record collector, as am I or whatever, and I said, where can I get Augie Myers records? And he couldn't believe that I even knew who he was. So anyways, fast forward to Cinco de Mayo. He puts out records and he puts on shows down there on like more, you know, roots, country shows. He has...
Sure, man's got to work.
Yeah, he's got a co-owner on this cool club out there called The Lonesome Rose. Mm-hmm. It's like a honky-tonk in San Antonio. So anyways, he was putting on a show with Augie Myers for Cinco de Mayo, and he asked if I wanted to play guitar in Augie's band, because he was putting together the backing band for Augie. And so I jumped on the opportunity, obviously, you know, but at the same time, I was recording my record, and there was a song on there that I kind of borrowed from Augie Myers as well. And I really, so I asked him if I could get his number to call him about doing the session. So I did. I called him, and Augie was cool about it, and he was down to do the session. So that's how it happened.
Right on. That song's Nickel and Diamond.
Yeah, that's Nickel and Diamond.
And Garrett also is from that scene, that San Antonio crew?
Yeah, so through Daniel, he introduced me to Garrett, who is also kind of like the band leader in a way, and this other guy...
that's Garrett T. Caps, if you're playing along at home.
Garrett T. Caps, yeah, Garrett T. Caps. And as DT Bufkin, who's got goes by a different name now. I think his band's called Pinky Ring, but those two guys were the
legendary outsiders, man. It's all good people.
Yeah, they're fantastic people, and they kind of really took me in. I was down in San Antonio for like a week, and just over a week, but it was an incredible experience, and the music scene down there is super cool, and the show itself was unbelievable, like one of the best I've ever played. To play with Augie was next level, and I played with Flaco Jimenez too.
So those Augie's actually on the album. He's not just there doing the kind of spoken word Augie, shout out.
No, Augie, yeah, Augie's on spoken word, but no, Augie plays organ and he sang backup vocals, but yeah, that's Augie on organ.
Right on, we're going to drop a piece of that. I wonder, amazing, though, what kind of drugs you were taking when you decided to make the Flying Mojito Brothers Refrito remix. That's hot shit, man.
Yeah, thanks.
That's my song of the summer.
Hell yeah. Those guys are just, we connected randomly through actually that Yacht Rock project I did way back. We connected way then, and then I didn't talk to them for a couple years, and then I noticed they were doing mixes with a lot of similar stuff I was listening to, like Tony Joe White and incredible CSN Crosby, Stills, and Nash remix they did, I think is incredible. And so we reconnected through that, and then I told them I asked them if they wanted to collaborate on a remix, and I had the song with Augie Meyer, and they were down. They were super down because they love Augie as well. So that's how that came about.
So what are the plans for the rollout of this album? Because I got to say, as far as my world and my stupid little lens as a music super, what you sent was like perfection. Alex, I guess, is who you work with at Ideafix Records.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's like the perfect pitch of all time. It's that one pager that you sent me, the, you know, I guess it's for music supervisors, for radio folks, for PR. It's kind of a catch-all. It's fantastic. I wish, and I'm going to actually see if I can get permission to share this, or a screenshot of it, minus the links, because it is a perfect pitch for a music supervisor, for referencing later, for having the assets that we need, for kind of getting me excited as a music fan, you know, just pure and simple, from the artwork to the layout, nailed it. So do you have a team around this, you know, your project?
I wish. No, I've done everything myself up to this point with help of friends for different things, you know, but everything, I've just, I don't know, like the artwork, my ex-partner Tara, she's an artist, she drew the artwork for the record, and
I was gonna ask you about that. That's amazing.
Yeah, we thank you. I really like it too. We collaborate.
Can people find her on Instagram and stuff?
Yeah, her Instagram is she's a tattoo artist as well, an incredible tattoo artist, but her Instagram is GUD_vibrations, good vibrations.
Right on, good vibrations.
She does all sorts of art. She paints leather jackets. She's very well-versed. She's great. And then, you know, Alex did some of this. I was lucky. Alex is a great graphic designer too, and he did the single artwork, which was, I really thought that was great, and big fan of Alex's work as well. And the bio was actually just written by Maximum Exposure, the same guy who put out the Bloom tape, Anthony, who I work with writing songs and with various production things out here in New York, actually. And yeah, so I don't have a team. I'd like one, you know. That's one thing this year I need to, you know, I'd like a little bit of help, you know.
Well, you do have a team. You got the super group helping you. I mean, it's the all these people. Like, it's that kind of thing. You've been doing it long enough to know who the good folks are. And you definitely have them. This is a tight bio. This is a tight pitch. This is tight artwork. It's fucking awesome.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
And you know, the single. I just didn't even notice that the single is "Stone When I Pray." What is the plan for that? Is that something like that? Is that you expect it to go on the radio? Like, what's a win for you? Is it, dare I say, sync?
Yeah, I mean, hey, sync would be good.
Is that something you think about, though, like actively?
Honestly, when I made that record, I didn't think about any of that. My vision for the record was more like I wanted to make a kind of like outsider folk country record that was like, the songs are really long. If you look at the songs, like I really extended certain things, and I wasn't thinking about that really at all. But
which makes it actually really great film, you know, because we have a lot to work on. We got heads and tails, you know, and pieces to edit with, lots to play with.
Yeah, you know, for sure. And you know, like I feel like that record, you know, it's just it was something I just made, and I'm proud of it, and I'm gonna just continue on and make something different next time. And
well, you should be really proud of it. It's a beautiful album. Stone When I Pray is the single. It's 4 minutes and 54 seconds long, and it's one of the shorter ones on the album.
Yeah.
So if you just want to get like kick back and relax, this is definitely one of those kind of albums. You've called it Cosmic Country. What is Cosmic Country, and what is that pedigree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of in that vibe. I mean, you could say the Cosmic Country is kind of something. I guess it's like hippie country. It's just like it's like roots music, American music, but with like a hint of drugs or something. Sure. That's
how it studs on like, your jean jacket, like, you know? It's a bit of Mark like, Bolan and a touch of Waylon Jennings.
Yeah, you know, it's like psychedelic in a way. You can say call drugs psychedelic or whatever. It's just like, you know, twisted slightly, like the Birds kind of started it and Gram Parsons. Maybe it's just from coming from a punk kind of background that like you do everything sort of unorthodox because you're kind of making it up as you go along. And like when I first started making music, I fell into making punk first because I think it was the easiest thing in the world. And like I was taking guitar lessons, learning Beatles songs and things like that, but as soon as I learned how to do a power chord, and I could do a lot more, so I went that route. So from there I learned how to do things on an unorthodox way because I was teaching myself. So when I approach any kind of music, unless I'm specifically writing something pop for somebody that's like supposed to be for a radio or something of that nature, where I'm targeting something I have to do or whatever. But for my, you know, when it's my own music or whatever, I don't know, I've taken an unorthodox approach to making yacht rock or even country or whatever you want to call it, folk music. It's I think it might always be unorthodox with me just because that's where I started, you know?
For sure. I mean, I'm a goalie and a music supervisor, so I very much believe in happy accidents, you know, being at the right place at the right time. And is that true when it comes to working with analog gear and recording that and keeping it, you know, keeping the mistakes, the hairiness in there and finding a beauty in that?
Yeah, that was just for this specific record. Like, I just wanted to do something that was like, the songs were long. I leave the mistakes. There was no mistakes. Like they're all
wait,
there.
Wait,
but
wait,
like,
no, there is. No, hold on. At 3:52 in Riding High. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, you know, you might be right. There might be one there, but if anyone made them, it's me. But I don't know. I was producing the thing essentially myself with the help of Braden, the engineer, big time, and the musicians playing on it. Like. But like the overall thing of it was kind of my vision or whatever, and I was kind of making it all up as I was going along, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. That's the beauty of it. That's, you know, you don't want to be constrained by a 2-minute pop song. These are wandering songs, and they should have been made by a wanderer.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. And you know, the next one I do, I honestly want to work with some producer. Different producers, and I'm putting together like a next year I'm going to go do some new recording, but I've kind of done a lot of music just all by myself, always a collaboration with one or two people, but I want to just do work with some more outside people and see what happens, you know.
Right on. But you were also part of Tina Turner's band, no? How did you end up jamming with her?
Well, when I lived in Los Angeles, I never actually was in the room. I just I got introduced to doing session guitar in Los Angeles by this guy Mark Five, who was a really cool producer from the Bay Area originally, and I was doing a rock band. It was kind of like a 70s rock band. I lived in Los Angeles from like 2008 to 2013. And I was doing a kind of 70s rock band, and I ended up coming across this guy, Mark Five, and this other guy, Bill Cutler. I cover one of Bill's songs on the record. The song Riding High is actually a cover of a Bill Cutler song.
Okay. Bill Cutler.
Yeah, Bill Cutler's the man. He's an old dude from San Francisco, and he's been there since the 60s, and he's played with Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir, and his history goes deep. He's a really great guy, and yeah, he taught me a lot, actually. These two guys changed my life, really. I was kind of, you know, doing, and, you know, I was doing my life in Los Angeles, let's say, you know, I was a young guy, and I was excessive with my behavior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, you can definitely feel that vibe in there. And one of the questions I didn't even know how to ask, I still don't know how to ask it. It's like, Grateful Dead? I mean, I'm the biggest Deadhead. Are you?
Me? Yeah, totally. You know, and actually, Bill introduced me to the Grateful Dead in that time. And I, before then, I always kind of had a wrong impression of them. And the band that I was playing in was heavily influenced by the Rolling Stones in the 70s, and, you know, I was really into that. I still am. They're my favorite band, but Bill showed me the Grateful Dead, and I remember listening to Till It Was Truckin', the first one. It's something I'd heard in passing, but I was just listening to it closer, and I was like, wait a minute, this is exactly what I like, you know? This is the kind of music I like already. And then he, Bill showed me the Dead, and the original has Jerry Garcia on guitar, as well as the New Riders of the Purple Sage bass player, all these heavy San Francisco guys or whatever. But the other guy, Mark Five, he did a lot of hip-hop production and R&B production, and he liked my guitar playing with the rock band, and he got me doing session guitar for the first time, where I started playing on,
Bones Thugs and Be Real and that stuff.
Yeah, that Be Real was actually, then through that, I met another hip-hop producer named Richard Segol Heraria, who's a very famous guy as well. He engineered all the Aftermath stuff, the Eminem and stuff. He's the engineer for Dr. Dre. All right. So there was a period there when I was recording a record in his studio with a different band, and then he got me to play some guitar on tracks that he had as well. And that's where the Be Real thing comes in. So I randomly started doing session guitar in Los Angeles on a lot of hip hop.
Is there no session work in Toronto anymore?
No, there's definitely been some stuff. When I moved back to Toronto, I continued it on a little bit. I got more into doing playing live, every Saturday night, playing three sets a night kind of stuff, and doing the odd session or whatever. And I was doing a lot of songwriting at one point, like for pop music. That's when all that yacht rock stuff was being done. So it kind of just changed a little bit, but I used all the stuff that I learned from playing all that R&B and stuff later on when I was doing that kind of songwriting for other people or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that stuff is, I mean, I don't know. I assume it's the hardest to play. There's such perfection in there. It's kind of a mix between all of the genres, but it's all about perfection, no?
Yeah, it has like a air of, you know, jazz and snobbery in it.
In a great way. In an Ascot-y kind of way.
Yeah, it's high class music. And
you're a high class guy, Matty.
Yeah.
Matty, we're going to close it out on the pod. We just kind of ask a few questions. And it's really curious for me. You say you're a Deadhead. When did that come in? Was that, for me, it was like age 13. But what were you listening to when you were 13 years old?
When I was 13, I was listening to lots of heavy metal. The first music that I really loved is heavy metal. I really liked 80s heavy metal, like Ozzy Osbourne and, Guns N' Roses, and Metallica was a big one when I was a little kid, you know.
Right, Megadeth. Anything you could buy a poster for.
Yeah, Slayer, all that stuff.
Slayer posters, man.
I liked horror movies and heavy metal when I was 13. And a lot of it.
Well, Toronto had the best poster, like, head shops.
On right? Yonge Street, yeah.
That shit made me want to get into so many of the bands that I actually still love today. What were you listening to at 21?
21, I was listening to lots of classic rock. I was listening to lots of Motorhead, but also, like, the Rolling Stones was a big one then. And that was kind of, who else?
But not the heavy side of classic rock. Kind of,
I mean, a little bit. Like, I like Black Sabbath a lot,
yeah,
but
sure, that's
I was listening to like The Faces as well, and some, you know, like just that more like rock and roll, blues, rock and roll kind of stuff. I really liked then,
for sure. And what are you listening to now?
Now, well, let's see. I've been listening to this week. I'm listening to Bill Monroe. I'm listening to the Grateful Dead. I listen to a lot of new stuff, actually, when I'm driving around and Spotify. This is a band I like, Teddy and the Rough Riders. I've been listening to that. I listen to new records just of all across the board.
Good, man.
A lot when I'm driving because I have Spotify, so I do that.
And do you have a film that's influenced you throughout your life? And have you heard of Fire in the Mountain, this Grateful Dead kind of sports film that just came out?
No, I know the Dead song. I really enjoy the song. I don't know about that movie, no.
I'm going to send it to you. I was just going to tease that a trailer came up, but I think they just dropped the full film online, which is insane. So I know what I'm doing after this podcast. Did you have a movie, though, that influenced you, that like kind of, that's my movie, man?
Well, when I saw the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter for the first time, that kind of flipped the script for me, and I was really into that movie. It's, you know.
Yeah, that's a huge film, right? That's a Maisel's Brother documentary. Like, that's a well-put-together
really
thing.
Cool. Yeah. You know, it's a good one. Maybe, like, I really like Peter Fonda movies in the 70s, The Trip and stuff. Yeah. I like that, you know. But over my whole life, when I was a kid, a movie that I really liked or something?
Yeah, I mean, we're always interested in that. I think movies shape who we are just as much as, you know, songs. And
yeah, music. I don't know. I mean, I always liked...
Mac and Me?
What's that?
Mac and Me?
No, I mean, I don't know that one, but
are you
I don't
a Goonies
know. I like,
guy?
Like campy horror. I what's that?
Are you a Goonie for life?
I liked that movie a lot when I was a kid. You know, I have a lot of good memories of watching it. Yeah, I like that movie.
I feel like Blind Maddie could have been on like the pirate ship.
Yes, you know, it's funny. Maybe there's a Goonies tag there somehow.
I know there is, man. So, what song are we gonna go out on? What's your favorite one to kind of leave the audience with from your repertoire? From the new album.
On the new one, I guess the first song on it, Stone When I Pray, is my favorite one.
Let's do it, man.
Amazing. Thanks a lot, man.
Have a stony day, brother.
Yeah, dude, you too. Take care.
Music Supercast is a production of Sorrel Studios and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.